You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
It's 6:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Radio Network, Civic Media Mornings. And by the way, happy Friday. We officially made it to the end of another work week. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Nooney. At 2 hours for us, and then the week is over.
That's right.
And I apologize in advance to everybody who heard that and went, shut up, because our day has just started.
We got a whole day yet.
Listen, this, Jamie, we get to start the show with two words that I didn't think we'd say for another at least 3 years: crisis averted.
Well, yes, it's hard in this day and age, yes.
It is hard to grasp on, but you got to grasp on. The president and Senate Democrats have reached an agreement. There will be, at this point, no government shutdown tomorrow morning. They reached that agreement less than 30 hours before a federal funding was set to expire. You know, it all hinged on DHS and ICE. It all hinged
it
on
did.
Funding. And the Democrats were not going to fund. And the Republicans didn't want to remove the DHS funding from the bill.
Right.
And it was on and on. But, Jamie, somehow they got together. And what they had to reach a compromise, I'm guessing.
Well, yes. And let's be mindful of the fact that this particular agreement funds the federal government through September. And it does have the exception of the Department of Homeland Security. Under this current plan, DHS would get only a 2-week funding extension. Democrats
may I jump in for a second,
please,
and just say, do we sense a pattern here with the administration in 2 weeks?
Yes.
Everything's two weeks.
Yes, always. So Democrats pushed to split DHS from this bigger spending bill, and they cited the growing concerns over immigration enforcement and, of course, the need for immediate oversight and reforms, which we know has been on their plate over the last couple of weeks since the second shooting in Minneapolis of Alex Preddy. Now, Trump called this deal bipartisan and urged quick approval. Senate Republicans are checking for objections since fast passage would require unanimous consent. So a brief shutdown is still possible because the House has to approve any changes, but lawmakers aren't scheduled to return until Monday. So it might be something just over the weekend, because that's going to complicate a whole lot of stuff for Mike Johnson, of course, Speaker of the House. He has a razor-thin majority in the House right now because of deaths, because of people stepping down. And there's also some resistance from the conservatives. And there's also some uncertainty about Democratic support for even a short DHS extension. The broader funding package would keep most of the federal agencies running, including defense, education, health and human services, transportation, treasury, state, labor, and also HUD. Without funding, non-essential services would shut down, and a lot of federal workers could be forced to work without pay. Now,
but this seems like there should be, I know they have to get 100% backing in the Senate. This part seems like a no-brainer, because we already have Republicans in the Senate who are calling for ICE to be revamped and looked at. And so I don't think there's going to be – this seems like everybody gets what they want.
Right.
The Republicans get to fund ICE and DHS for another couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And remember, they already have money from the big, beautiful bill, so they're all right. Democrats get that – a date on paper that says the funding for DHS stops on this date.
Right.
And then we have to, in the interim, we must be working on oversight and regulation and changes and all of that. So this part of the bill should not be up for debate. It should be pretty easy. And especially if all the senators and Congress people have to do is turn on their TV and see where people stand.
Right.
This issue.
And I think getting this through the Senate is going to be a much easier sell than probably the House, because a lot of the Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives they have problems with this bill. They don't think that DHS, there's anything wrong. They think everything is wonderful. And so I think Mike Johnson is going to have a harder time getting it through the House of Representatives than they're going to have in the Senate at this point.
The only reason I disagree with that is because the president has already come out and said this was bipartisan.
Sure.
And if you as a Republican congressman or woman vote against this, you are going against what he directly
True.
Said. And we know that that doesn't fly. And Mike Johnson is not going to put up with that, because then it takes away the bullet of the last
Right.
shutdown, where it was the Democrats' fault.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you already said it was bipartisan and you had your folks in line and they're not listening to you. That's not the Democrats' fault.
I also thought it was interesting yesterday in a press scrum, as he was scurrying from the chambers to the floor or vice versa. I wasn't really sure where he was going in the building. He was scurrying though. He actually said something contrary to the president when asked about Kristi Noem. The president's been very supportive of her job as Secretary of DHS. Mike Johnson basically said, no, I think there needs to be more questions asked and she probably needs to appear in front of the House. So I thought that was an interesting departure
Yes.
for Mike Johnson. We don't see him not agree with the president very often.
Maybe he was feeling good because he was scurrying from getting his spine reattached.
Could, absolutely. Maybe. Sometimes those things will help, right?
Yes, of course. Yes.
So when it comes to the funding of the government right now, immigration enforcement is going to likely continue regardless due to separate funding streams approved last year. We've talked about this, right?
Yes.
DHS had millions of dollars given to it through the Big Beautiful Bill. The funding in the bill totals about $64 billion, including roughly $10 billion for ICE. And again, those are billion with a B. It includes modest restrictions such as fewer detention beds, reduced enforcement funding, and money for body cameras. But it stops short of changes Democrats want, including limits on shootings, mask use, and also detaining U.S. citizens. Now, the shooting of Alex Preddy in Minneapolis shifted the political landscape, especially going into this particular budget battle, because several Democrats who previously supported the bill are now saying that they aren't going to back it without any changes. Democrats are calling for tighter rules on immigration agents, also including warrant requirements, coordination with local law enforcement, mandatory body cameras, and independent investigations. And you mentioned a little bit about the public opinion. Mm-hmm. It appears to be moving as well and shifting pretty dramatically and very quickly, because several recent polls, and I know a lot of people take polls with a grain of salt, but they're starting to show skepticism of ICE. Majorities now say that the agency is too aggressive, has gone too far, and even inspires very little confidence. So I think this is going to be interesting as it moves through. We have not averted a full shutdown yet. Hopefully, though, it is a weekend shutdown, which makes it more palatable for the American people who are actually affected by jobs and some of these programs that would lose funding.
It just doesn't. And I tend to look at things from a common sense standpoint,
mm-hmm.
where the machinations of the law and the government sometimes are contrary to common sense. And based on the overriding sentiment in this country, and based on what we're seeing now within the Republican Party of a break and a fracture because of support and regarding the support for ICE, I don't understand why it wouldn't just be beneficial to everybody to pull that ICE funding out and deal with that separately. And let's get the other stuff done. If we pull out the DHS funding for the next 2 weeks, then there's no shutdown, because then they can vote and get the other bill through. It'd
right.
be fine. Monday, the House is back in session. We can start working on this. We know what each side is looking for with this DHS funding. Let's just work on that.
Yeah.
But they want to make everything has to be combined, because you got to just roll things
right.
in, hoping that stuff doesn't get noticed. And that's always been the way with political budgets. You just put the pork in there and let's roll.
Yeah.
And people are tired of that.
Absolutely. And really, at this point, it's unclear if there's going to be enough consensus for this bill to move quickly. House Democrats say they may support a short-term DHS extension if it leads to real negotiations, but not a blank check. And I think that's where
Right.
some of the pause is coming from, some of the Democrats who might not be willing to pass this quickly. this administration does not always come through and follow through with their word, right? I mean, let's be realistic
Are you throwing around the label of disingenuous to this administration?
Yes.
I am not. I will not sit here and listen to that. I'm going to stand up and listen.
I have to wonder: is the bipartisan negotiation a ploy? Because this administration cannot take a public hit. They do not want another shutdown on their conscience, right? And we're in an election year. We know how most of America felt about the last shutdown. And so you've got to also wonder, are they going to actually come back to the table and negotiate in good faith? They said they would with the ACA subsidies. That did not happen. So that's where my pause is that will they actually negotiate in good faith? And if I was a betting woman, right, and I went on the track record of this current administration, my guess would be no, they will not be renegotiating DHS unless they absolutely need more funding to carry out their mission across the country.
I'm going to hold on to my wagering philosophy that I would bet that now that Trump has gone out on the limb and said, we've got it, we've got a deal, and it's bipartisan and stuff, the Congress will negotiate in good faith. I don't know what the president would do, but I think the Congress will be forced to carry out his orders, and if he wants this solved, it's going to get solved. And he's looking at public opinion, he's looking at, the fracturing of his own party, and he wants to stay in power.
Right.
So if the Georgia ballot grab doesn't work, he's got to do something. And maybe I'll ingratiate myself. The problem is, let's be honest, nobody's going to forget what happened in Minneapolis come November. It doesn't matter if now that everybody can be singing Kumbaya for the next 7-8 months. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We're not going to forget what happened.
No, and I think that's it. I really, truly hope that is where the administration is looking. We haven't been able to trust what they've said multiple times. How often has the president come out and said one thing, and then we see Mike Johnson in a press scrum scurrying again through the chambers? And
every time you say scurry, I can only think of one animal.
I know.
All right.
So he scurries through, and then all of a sudden he basically tells us, well, that's not what the president said. That's not what we're going to do. What are you talking about? It's on video.
Right.
It's on video. Yes, that's exactly what he said.
Jamie, who are you going to believe?
Well, I'm going to believe
Johnson
the video.
Or your lion eyes?
I'm going to believe the video. That's what I'm going to believe. Call me crazy
deepfakes,
on a Friday.
All deep fakes.
So
I don't know what you're talking
for
about.
For now, the next few days are going to basically determine whether this fragile agreement holds, whether Washington can avoid another shutdown with this volatile debate over immigration enforcement, accountability. And I guess we just breathlessly watch and see what happens. We don't really have another choice at this point, huh?
No, and I will be breathless. I'll be clutching my pearls and fanning myself because I feel a vapor coming on. And
well, Susan Collins, how dare you?
How many times have I said that with more colorful language? Hey, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Civic Media News Director Shelley Pittman. Representative Mark Pocan met with Voces de la Frontera yesterday to talk a little bit about immigration, and they had a message for ICE. We'll get to that.
That's right. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. Happy Friday. And this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
It's It's 6:22 right now. We hope that your morning is off to a great start. Thank you for joining us. If you are listening in the Oshkosh Appleton area, you are listening on WISS. If you're in Richland Center, on WRCE or in the La Crosse area, WLCX. Maybe you're on the app this morning, which you can download for free over your Google store or in your Apple store. All of this to say, we are glad that you're here and happy Friday. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. Thanks for being here. Yesterday, Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan joined members of the immigrant rights group Voces de la Frontera to discuss federal immigration enforcement. I don't know why. Is that in the news? Yes, nonstop. We must all that. He was joined by Executive Director Christine Newman-Ortiz of Voces de la Frontera, and they had a nice press conference. And our own Civic Media News Director, Shelley Pittman, was there. She covered it, and she joins us now to give us an update. Shelley, thanks for getting up early. We appreciate it.
Good morning. No problem. It's nice to be here.
You've got your morning voice on. That's terrific. What was the overall theme of yesterday's press conference?
Yeah, well, in a time when, on a day when immigration is again making headlines, Congressman Pocan was in Madison to denounce ICE and also talk about the importance, in his view, of preparing for immigration enforcement and calling on essentially mutual aid, along with Christine Newman-Ortiz, head of Voces de la Frontera, and Reverend Dr. Julia Berkey, who's a senior pastor at Orchard Ridge United Church of Christ, which is where about 70 volunteers met, in addition to media at a press conference there. You know, obviously that came before a day where there have been calls for a national strike today over ICE and an immigration surge in Minneapolis. It comes ahead of a big vote on Capitol Hill over immigration enforcement, a potential shutdown. I know you guys have been on that. And it comes ahead of other immigration news even tomorrow, right? There are unity rides all across the nation in honor of Alex Preddy, who was shot and killed a week ago by a CPB agent. It comes ahead of a federal judge in Minneapolis summoning Todd Lyons, the acting director of ICE, to appear in his courtroom. That's scheduled to happen today. We don't know what's going to happen there, right?
So let's talk a little bit about what Congressman Pocan had to say about the shutdown, because in our last segment, Brian and I talked about the fact that the president and the Democrats have a bipartisan agreement at this point. It still needs to go through the proper protocols in the chambers and get the right vote. But what did the congressman have to say about a potential shutdown?
He essentially said, you know what, I am in Madison today and things tend to change by the hour in considering what will happen on Capitol Hill, but that there would probably be a short-term continuing resolution agreed to by Democrats and some Republicans, and that the other resolutions would also pass.
Part of what they were talking about yesterday, Shelley, was, and we're joined by Shelley Pittman. She is the Civic Media News Director covering this press conference yesterday. Christine Newman-Ortiz talked a lot about how people should get ready, what they needed to do. And they put a new 800 number out for people. What is that all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So Voces de la Frontera has been running a hotline number for a good while, I think, even before President Trump was elected, in order to report suspected immigration activity, right? And there's been a lot of misinformation. There's been a lot of misinformation. It happened in Madison recently. You know, I see it on the Reddit posts for Madison and Wisconsin, right? Where someone sees, a sheriff's training and they assume that, you know, police officers, and you think maybe that's here. And it's not to dismiss the fact that ICE has been in in Wisconsin in some isolated incidents, right? But maybe not to the extent that they've been in Minneapolis. But Voces de la Frontera absolutely has a hotline where you can report it. They have a community defense network, they call it. And so they will send verifiers out to verify every instance of information. And so Christine Newman-Ortiz said, we've really been encouraging folks, especially this week, to not post anything about ICE unless they're confirmed. We go out and do that. And she talked about the most recent misinformation. Let's hear her her talk about the hotline and that report.
The most recent example was that a rumor, and we think it was actually core, you know, it was intentional. It's appeared to be organized call that was spreading the rumor that ICE had booked hotels in different, you know, rooms in different hotels across the state. And we do take every, you know, call seriously. But we were very quick to verify that that was false in each of the cities where that surged. And the problem is that when people see that posted online, and even though their intention is good to try to warn people about this or raise awareness, the best thing they can do is to call that 1-800 number.
And that 1-800 number is 1-800-427-0213.
So, Shali, we've got just about 20 seconds here. Did they have any advice yesterday at this press conference for local municipalities and what people should be doing and what local government should be doing? I know I'm not giving you much time to get those thoughts
it's okay.
in there.
I'll just say real quick. So Madison and Milwaukee are looking at any rules they could adopt in order to block federal immigration officials, and they said the best thing you can do is basically listen to us and other immigration advocacy groups.
Thank you so much, Shali Pittman. She is the news director here at Civic Media. It is 6:29, and coming up, Brian, we're going to talk about what you would do if ICE approaches you. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Thanks, Shali. We will be back on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's 6:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And in just a second, we're going to talk to you about your rights if you are approached by ICE. But there's some news coming out of Washington that we wanted to just touch on really quick. If you're paying attention, you know Jerome Powell, the head of the Fed, has been in the president's crosshairs for a while, so much so that there's a criminal investigation into Jerome Powell. And yesterday, the president did not like Powell's statements that, there's still inflation and, prices are still going up. So he went on a Truth Social rant, as he is wont to do. And now today, he's already looking for Jerome Powell's replacement.
Well, of course.
Remembering that the president, in fact, nominated Jerome Powell.
Right, right. In fact, he chose Powell to lead the Fed in 2017. But this morning, he nominated former Federal Reserve official Kevin Warsh to be the next chair of the Fed. He will replace Jerome Powell when the term expires in May. Now, he went to Truth Social to say all the I can't even say the word this morning. Thank you. The tongue was not matching with the brain Friday and all that.
The usual adjectorial blizzard that he uses when he writes?
Yes. I have known Kevin for a long period of time and have no doubt that he will go down as one of the great, in all capitals, Fed chairman, maybe the best. Out on top of everything else, he's a central casting and he will never let you down. That was what he said on Truth Social just this morning. No, I have no idea what the last part is either. I tried to parse through it.
Being right out of central casting means he's like a stereotype. That's usually when we use that terminology. you that's
right?
what we mean. But
right?
Who knows? What do I know?
Now, the appointment will require Senate confirmation. And he was a member of the Fed board from about 2006 to 2011. He was actually the youngest governor in history when he was appointed at the age of 35. Now, he's a little bit of an unlikely choice for President Trump, mostly because he's been a hawk on some of the rate increases. He typically supports higher interest rates to control inflation, and we know that the president would like to see lower interest rates.
Issue.
Yeah, down to about 1% is what the president would like to see, where the current level is at about 4%. So it's an interesting pick for this current administration. But yes, to take
it's
over Jerome Powell.
It's almost like he got a name of somebody and went with it, and then now it's now he's realized, oh, maybe this is not the guy. But we'll keep an eye on that and
Absolutely.
Let you know what's happening. And I'm sure Jerome Powell has a big calendar on his wall where he just puts the red X's through the days and he's counting down till May. He's like, I am so out of here. I cannot believe it. But let's talk
yeah.
about this, because
yes.
we've heard the unsubstantiated rumors, all of that, but there is a chance that ICE will come to Madison or Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
They've already had raids in the northern part of the state, which has affected agriculture because farm workers are being taken, or farm workers are just afraid to come to work. So there's a good chance that things, hopefully they never get as bad as Minneapolis,
right.
but it could happen here. So what do you do if you are confronted with ICE? And I know you're thinking, well, Brian, I'm a white guy. I'm not getting confronted by ICE. All right. Maybe live in that fantasy if you want. But Jamie, we like to tell people how to arm themselves with facts.
You
and
too.
that's what we want to do, because there's everybody thinks they're a lawyer because they watch two seasons of Law and Order. That doesn't, unfortunately, if that was true, I'd be like the top litigator
right?
in the country.
Right, me too.
It'd be fantastic. I'd be raking it in. But that's not always the case. Let's give people some of their rights.
Yeah, no, it is not always the case. And since the president expanded this immigration crackdown in Wisconsin, ICE arrests doubled during the first 6 months of this current presidency, at least according to a July 2025 analysis by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The largest increase, as you mentioned, involved immigrants without criminal convictions, a trend that has drawn concern for a lot of civil rights and immigrant advocacy groups. Now, federal immigration agents, including ICE and Border Patrol, are allowed to stop people in public places. However, everyone in the United States, regardless of their immigration status, has constitutional rights, including the right to remain silent and the right to refuse consent to searches. Okay, these are our constitutional rights, so keep this in mind. Immigration agents can arrest someone in a public place without a warrant if they believe the person is in the country illegally and may flee before a warrant can be obtained. This is why you hear so many people right now saying that they are carrying their documentation with them, because yeah. that would prove that they are here legally if they are stopped by immigration.
Show me your papers.
Exactly. Now, to enter a private home, and we actually talked about this on this program earlier this
Monday.
Week. Right. Mm-hmm. To enter a private home or a non-public area of a business, agents must have a warrant signed by a judge. Legal experts note that administrative ICE warrants do not carry the same authority as judicial warrants. So people are not required to open their doors to immigration agents unless a judicial warrant is presented. Individuals can ask to see the warrant, and they still have the right to remain silent even if an agent enters the home. So ICE may temporarily detain individuals to verify immigration status. While ICE has no legal authority to detain or deport U.S. citizens, reporting shows that more than 170 citizens were mistakenly detained during recent enforcement actions. Detainees have the right to contact a lawyer, receive legal visits, and request a bond hearing before an immigration judge. And
those are the last couple things you said
mm-hmm.
are the tipping point for all of these problems.
Right.
We could randomly stop and check your immigration status. Who's getting stopped? Hey, you're brown. We're gonna see. It doesn't matter if you're Native American, Hispanic, Asian, Somali. You don't look like me. And so I've got to check you. And then how many stories have come out about people being held illegally for hours or days or weeks without any access
right.
to an attorney? And if we've learned anything from television, and mostly it's that fat guys get really hot wives. But other than that, what have we learned? We have learned always ask for a lawyer.
Right.
Every interrogation scene that Debbie and I watch where the guy starts talking, no, lawyer.
Right, right. And Olivia Benson, by the way, on SVU loves it when they start talking without an attorney present.
Oh, that's they salivate those TV
right?
cops.
But, you know, it goes to show that this administration is obviously, they don't care about the constitutional rights. Because even in Minneapolis, witnesses who videotaped the killing of Alex Pratt were detained by ICE in some instances and kept for hours in detention centers without being able to call attorneys, having contact with anybody. They really had no idea why they were there
right.
because, again, it is legal to record the actions of federal agents. So they really had no idea why they were there. So this is going beyond also just immigration status. This is going beyond. This is going to the point of interfering on people's other constitutional rights and detaining people without any sort of representation. Now, agents can ask for identification, but individuals generally don't have to answer questions or provide any sort of documentation when
right.
detained by ICE. And in Wisconsin, drivers have to show a valid driver's license during a traffic stop. Passengers are not required to provide identification, which is very important if you get stopped while in a vehicle.
Yeah.
ICE agents may ask drivers to exit their vehicles for officer safety, but they can't search vehicles or your belongings without consent or a judicial warrant. In other words, right. they have to have a reason to do so.
Yeah.
And
they can ask you to step out. And if you step out, you can say, no, I don't consent to you. No,
right.
you can't look in my car. No, you can't search me. And I mean, if you're driving, you have to have your driver's license on you anyway.
Right.
That has nothing to do with ICE. That's just the law. You got to have that. But remember, that's a good point. I would assume, you know, if I'm a passenger, my buddy's driving, he gets stopped, and they ask me for my ID too, I'd probably think, oh, I have to give them my
mm-hmm.
ID as well. But
right.
you do
no,
not have
you
to.
Do not have to. Now, the First Amendment actually protects the public's right to observe and record law enforcement, as we were just saying, but that's very important right now to keep in mind, given the current state of affairs in this country, including the federal immigration agents. In public spaces, especially as long as observers do not interfere with the enforcement actions.
Yes.
So the case of Minneapolis witnesses, they were across the street. They were recording,
right.
and they were still detained in many cases by ICE agents because of the fact that they were just recording the incident. People also have the right to protest peacefully, although authorities may impose reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. So if you're out there protesting peacefully, that is your right to do so.
Yep.
But in order to continue to protest peacefully, if law enforcement tells you to move back or to get out of a certain area, keep the protest going. I'm not saying that not to do that, but we want people to be able to have this right in this country. So at least listen to what law enforcement is telling you in
these
cases.
Don't play into anybody's hands.
Right.
Do it the right way. Get out there. Make noise. March.
Right.
Hold your signs. I loved the last march I was at. A lot of people in inflatable costumes. I don't know why, but they all wanted to dress like dinosaurs. I was like, that's cool. Okay.
Who doesn't love an inflatable costume?
Oh, I do. I loved it. There was an inflatable baby Trump walking around. I laughed and laughed.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, no. If you're gonna get dressed up, it's more exciting than just going in regular clothes. That was
yes,
you know,
yes.
Just another run of the mill protester.
And I would say that when people gather to peacefully protest by following the laws, it keeps not only the group safe, it keeps the law enforcement safe, because
yes.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's what they're there for too. They want to keep everybody
right.
safe and their city safe. And I get sometimes
yeah, but you're talking about
the municipal.
Police
I was
department.
Just gonna say yes,
not
the municipal.
The masked ICE.
No. That's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
I had
to stop myself because I was going to label those officers something.
I know.
I know. Frank doesn't want.
I know.
Frank doesn't want to say calling.
So civil rights groups encourage people to know their rights and really create safety plans in advance. If you're going to be out somewhere, if you are on a sidewalk and you see something happen around you, make sure you know, again, what your rights are and that you have options, especially as immigration enforcement activity increases across the region. So,
and if I may make a suggestion, because how many of us carry the number of an attorney with us?
Not many. No.
And if you're going to a protest and you know you're the kind of person who will be videotaping, you're going to be more vocal maybe than your neighbor, just have a number, just in case, because you never know. You don't want to, if you are detained and you do get a chance to contact an attorney, you don't want to be going, I don't know any attorneys.
Right.
Just prepare. It's just like we'd bring a water bottle or something else to a protest.
Yeah.
To drink, not to throw.
Keep it with you. Keep it with you. And that way you know that you have that number. And again, they legally have to allow you that represententation. They have to.
Lawyer. Lawyer. Anything they ask you, what's your name? Lawyer.
Whether or not they will legally they have to, which is why this administration also ends up being in courtrooms later down the road, because they don't allow that sort of representation to enter the facilities or give people their constitutional rights. Yeah. And I get it's hard because we're dealing with a whole different realm of people and thinking than we've ever dealt. But know your rights. Stay safe out there no matter what you're doing. It's 6:48 right now. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And when we come back, something that is 100% Wisconsin, it's time for Alice in Dairyland on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's 6:52 right now. We hope you're having a great start to your Friday morning. We made it to the end of another work week. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan, and just before the break, we were talking about your rights if you were approached by ICE, and Steve texted in, and you can too, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, that is how you call, that is how you text. Steve had a question. He said, can ICE confiscate your phone if you were filming them? I would worry that they would destroy our phone. And Jamie, who loves research, has the answer.
I do.
It is pulled
I
up.
Do.
So what is the answer?
So ICE agents legally cannot confiscate your phone or delete your recordings without a warrant, even while you are filming them in public, especially if you are in the state of Wisconsin. Now, there have been situations that have been reported where they have tried to take people's phones or they have destroyed them on the sidewalk legally, though, again, they cannot do that. You are protected under the First Amendment. Recording police and federal agents in public is legal as long as you do not physically interfere with their actions. Now, again, they've been known to do this a few different times. We've actually seen the footage. Agents can also not force you to delete your footage, take your phone without your consent or without a warrant unless you're arrested, or force you to provide a passcode. So make sure that maybe your phones have strong passcodes on them instead of the biometrics with the finger and fingerprint, face ID, all of that. But use a strong passcode, and they legally, according to the First Amendment, cannot do these things. Alicia also chiming in on the conversation over on our social media pages, saying that protesters are being told to write the number for the ACLU and keep it on them as well, which is also a good option. So thank you for the comments and the questions here this morning. We got to talk
about while the world burns, Jamie, we have to turn our attention. We have to turn
something
our attention
that is
here to
Wisconsin. So
Wisconsin.
This is 100%. Such a Wisconsin thing. I love it, though.
We had to explain it to Frank yesterday because he had no idea. I am familiar with this because I have talked to ladies who held this title. But what are we talking about? Well, the search for the 79th annual Alice in Dairyland has begun.
That's
the
right.
Search. If you don't know about Alice in Dairyland, you're missing out. This is a woman who will go through a long process, which we'll describe, and she will then represent the agricultural interests of Wisconsin for an entire year.
Yeah.
The current Alice in Dairyland's reign, I almost said reign of terror. It is not a reign of
terror.
I didn't know Alice in Dairyland was menacing. God.
Alice carries out cheese-related vengeance across the state. No, that is not true. But anytime I say reign, I always just automatically tag of terror on it.
Right.
She's Alice in Dairyland until May. So now we've got to find a new Alice in Dairyland before May. And what's fun, I think, about this, Jamie, is the contest, the finals move from county to county year. So you never know where things are happening.
Right, right. And applications are actually open. You have to get your applications in by the end of today. And you have to submit a resume, a cover letter, references, and an application to the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We are not messing around here with our Alice in Dairyland. And then those materials are reviewed to determine which candidates will move forward. To qualify for an initial interview, Brian.
Yeah, this is not, as TLC once said, don't want no scrubs.
No, we do not want our agricultural scrubs. To even qualify, you applicants need to have a strong background in Wisconsin agriculture, along with at least 3 years of experience or training in communications, marketing, education, or public relations. Public speaking experience and hands-on work with media or marketing campaigns are also required. These women are always gifted, they're talented, and they're absolutely wonderful. After the first round of interviews, okay, there's multiples of these, up to six candidates are selected so that they can advance. Those finalists are officially announced in March of this year following training and professional development seminars, which are then hosted by the DATCP. During that time, candidates also complete assignments so that they can prepare for the final round. We are not messing around with our agriculture here.
This is not a beauty pageant.
No. That's what it started as originally, though, in 1948.
Well, sure.
Did you know that? Yes.
I would have imagined, But listen, now we've got... here's what we've learned over the years. And we haven't learned much when it comes to women. There's still, women are still, we got to take care of you with your health decisions and stuff. But what we have learned is that women can be not only beautiful, but they can also be accomplished. It's threatening to a lot of men when they are accomplished, but you can still do it, ladies. So good for you.
It's good
and
that
I
we
say
can,
that facetiously, please.
It's good
ladies.
We can
don't,
make
don't
our own
me.
Decisions. It's good that we're capable of those things. For the most part. The process will wrap up in mid-May with a three-day partially public interview in the host county. As you said, it moves around. It's in a different location year to year. I believe this year it's in the Wausau area.
Yes, it is in Wausau.
Candidates are evaluated through television and radio interviews, speeches, their writing samples, public interactions, and demonstrations of their agricultural knowledge. And of course, as Wisconsinites, we are invited to attend two of these evening events during the final round, including the announcement of the next Alice in Dairyland, who then represents Wisconsin agriculture across the state and beyond for an entire year. These women really do truly work endlessly promoting agriculture at different venues all across the state for an entire year. It is.
Do you think any of them have been lactose intolerant?
Well, they do. That's a good question.
That's a hard-hitting question, Brian.
However,
I'm a hard-hitting guy.
However, they do promote other areas of agriculture, not just our dairy heritage. So
I know, but it says Dairyland, and Wisconsin is the dairy.
I feel
state,
like as
so.
Much cheese that they probably promote, and as much milk as they probably promote, and maybe have to partake in at some of these events. I feel like it would be a dangerous combination to be lactose intolerant.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. They all these other fantastic things they need for their experience.
Are we even allowed to be lactose intolerant in this state?
I want to look into Big Dairyland and find out what's happening. That's all.
It's 6:59 right now. Coming up, Tony Evers. He's been doing a lot of things the last few days between property taxes and reforms. We're going to talk about that. Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. We will be back with more on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.